So let us rise up and build. So what I want us to do at the end of this little lesson is to ask, what's your goal? What are you going to want to build this semester? What are you individually? Because we do discussion groups. Got it? So I want you to share, what do you want to, with God's help, build this semester? And so we're going to talk about that. Okay, got it? So, Nehemiah, chapter 1. All right, Nehemiah, right before Job, right? Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job. So it's about the third way mark in your Bible. Nehemiah. It's page 757 in my Bible. That's the joke that just never goes away. So, right now, our Sunday morning lessons, we're doing the book of Joshua. We're going to be spending probably about 2 months in the book of Joshua. And I introduced Joshua as a book that does a number of things. It connects the Pentateuch, the rest of the Bible. It's a book of history, but it's also a book about leadership. And I said the other Old Testament book that a large part of what it's about is leadership is Nehemiah. So I thought, let's look there. Nehemiah 1, 1 through 3. Are you with me? Are you awake? Are you all? Okay, great, great, great. All right, good. So here we go. The words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. In the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, while I was on in the citadel of Susa, Hanani, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men, and I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem. They said to me, "Those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire." So God's church, if you will, God's kingdom is in a bad place. The 20th year, that's actually the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, who is the fifth emperor of Persia. So the year is 445 BC. A little bit of context, because if you read the book of Ezra, Ezra describes how Artaxerxes said to Ezra, "Go back, take a bunch of people, and build the city." It was a great time. And they went back and they gave him lots of money and all that sort of stuff. And guess what they didn't do? They'd already built the temple. That was about 7 years earlier. They didn't build the walls of the city. So it's kind of embarrassing. God's people they're not really doing what God told them to do. So Nehemiah is there in Susa. Susa is one of the two capitals of the Persian Empire. It would be in Iran today. All right, here's Iran. It would be over there, kind of on the southwest end of Iran. And he hears really bad news about God's kingdom, about God's people, which is the walls are broken down. All right? And the city has been burned, and the gates, they're not even there. And it's kind of depressing, because this is God's kingdom. All right? Now, by the way, when Nehemiah asked this question, this was not exactly new information. I think he probably kind of sort of knew what it was about. Because, you know what, if the city had been rebuilt, do you think Nehemiah might have maybe possibly heard about that? He probably would have. In fact, it's been since 516, you mentioned the building of the temple. So it's been since 516 BC, which is roughly 72 years that the temple got rebuilt, and yet the city is still lying in ruins. And so just think about where Christianity is at here in Merced right now. I mean, how's it doing? How's it going? So Merced is lying in ruins spiritually, we could argue, right? All right? And I would say UC Merced, Merced College, there's not a whole lot of really awesome, amazing stuff going on for God. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, a lot of work to bring salvation to our city, to our college, to our university. And the question is, who cares enough to do something about it? One person we know is Nehemiah. He cares. So let's see what Nehemiah did. He said, oh, well, that's not my problem. Oof. No, that's not what he did. I've got a job to do. You know, who told me to step in? When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. Have you wept over the condition of the lives of the people around you? Or have you gotten hardened to it? Did anybody care like Nehemiah? I sat down and I wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Like I said, that's why we're going to be doing some praying and some fasting here. Amen. We want to get our hearts in a place, so we're going to step in and do something about it. All right? We're not just doing fasting because that's a ritual that Christians do. We're doing fasting now because we want to call upon God to do something. So you see, Nehemiah, he really cares. And then he prays. So first he fasted, and then he prayed. And here's his prayer. And to me, there are like three or four prayers in the Old Testament that are my favorite example prayers. One of them is in Daniel chapter 9. Another one is the one at the end of 1 Chronicles, David's prayer. And of course, there's the Psalms, obviously. But there's this one right here. Lord, the God of heaven, the great and awesome God, who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him and keep his commands, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer your servant is praying. Before you day and night for your servants, the people of Israel, I confess the sins we Israelites, including myself and my father's family, have committed against you. We have acted very wickedly towards you. We have not obeyed the commands, decrees, and laws you gave your servant Moses. Remember the instruction you gave your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands, then even if your exiled people are at the farthest horizon, I will gather them from there and bring them to the place I've chosen as a dwelling for my name. They are your servants and your people whom you have redeemed by your great strength and your mighty hand, Lord. Let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. Give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man being Artaxerxes. We'll explain what's going on there. I want you to notice something about this prayer. There's two things that really stick out to me. Number one, the boldness of Nehemiah. Basically, it says, God, wake up! God, pay attention! Yeah. Hey! Hey! You know, right? He says, let your ear be attentive. Open your eyes, God. I mean, it sounds kind of presumptuous. God, hello?
Remember?
God, have you read the Bible lately? Right? Doesn't he practically say that? The boldness. I like that. Bold prayer. On a scale of 1 to 10, where are you doing on your bold prayer? I'm about a 3. Most of the time. Okay, the second thing I really notice about this prayer is his humility in saying we. Because if I know much about Nehemiah, he probably didn't do virtually any of these sins. And he confessed for God's people. He took personal responsibility for sins he hadn't even committed. Got that? So when he's talking to God, he said, we. And he's, again, and look at the prayer in Daniel 9, it's the same thing. Yes. You know, people say, you Christians, you did the slavery. And we say, no, I didn't. Oh, yes, you did. No, I didn't. Oh, yes, you did. Now, you know, the Crusades, you Christians, oh, I didn't do that. Oh, yes, you did. You know, the evil that's been done in the name of Christianity, we need to take that on ourselves. The the bad behavior that Christians do all the time. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I just really appreciate his humility in saying we. The third thing I appreciate is he's been reading his Bible, right? I mean, he's quoting the Bible. I like the fact that he's quoting the Bible at God. That's kind of funny. Yeah, and if you read Deuteronomy 28 through 30, he's referring to that. God made very specific promises. And he's calling on God to fulfill his promises. And if God has made a promise to you, feel free to call him out on it. Hmm. Maybe Nehemiah should be a little bit more humble here in terms of how he's challenging God. But I don't think God minds. I really don't think God minds. I love it, and I think it's Jeremiah 1:15 where it says, God, you are always faithful, and you everything you do, say you always do, but blah, blah, blah. You know, and he kind of calls God out. All right, so we see, first thing, if we want to have a semester of building great things, and by the way, we're going to be good students, all right? We're going to go to our classes. We're not going to, you know, do what our daughter did one semester. She helped 10 people become a Christian, and she kind of practically flunked her class. We're not going to be doing that, all right? We're going to be good students. We're going to go to class. We're going to set a goal to get an A or at least a B in every class. But we want to build, right? We want to build. Okay, so Nehemiah, he set an example by weeping over the condition of the kingdom of God, by mourning, by fasting, and by praying. All right? Good. And then he says, I was cupbearer to the king, in the end of verse 11. So now you think cupbearer, that's kind of like, you know, the guy who opens the door. The cupbearer, that was a very, very important political position. The cupbearer was a person who had personal contact with the king every day, and typically they would be one of his chief advisors, almost like a chief of staff kind of guy. The fact that a Jew was in a position of being kind of like an inner circle guy in the entire Persian Empire, that's really something. That reminds me of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Daniel, that whole thing. All right, so anyway, so he's the cupbearer of the king, and the theoretical job of the cupbearer is, in case somebody's trying to poison the king, he drinks, and he eats this stuff, that's the theoretically the job, but actually he's an important advisor to the most powerful man in the entire world at that time, Artaxerxes, the emperor of Persia Mede. All right, great. Now let's read Nehemiah 2. Next slide. Nehemiah the cupbearer. So that's supposed to represent what he's doing there. Okay. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and I gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you're not ill? This could be nothing but sadness of heart. Context. Apparently, you weren't allowed to be sad. Capital punishment, getting the king down, man, he's depressed. So technically, maybe this is a preacher's point. I've heard this from commentators. That's what I've heard anyway. So take it with a grain of salt, perhaps. I don't know. But I've understood that he is literally risking his life to come before the emperor with a downcast face. All right? And so that's why, because he really cares about God's kingdom. Right? I was very much afraid. See, there you go. All right? But I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king said to me, what is it you want? Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. Then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, how long will your journey take and when will you get back? it pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, if it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates, so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. May I also have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the royal park, so that he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city and wall for the residence I will occupy. And may you give me $17 trillion, and I mean...
Small amount of money,
no. This is a big ask, folks. A big ask. And because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted me my requests. I went to the governors of Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. The king had also sent army officers and cavalry with me. He sent a whole contingent of soldiers with him. All right, so that's kind of cool. This is kind of working out pretty well here, right? So anyway, apparently having a sad face in front of the king could lead to capital punishment. And so when the king asked him why he's sad, he could say, I'm sorry, I'm sad, I'll do better next time. But instead he just says, hey, king, I have every right to be really sad because you know what? My people are in a bad place. Right? It reminds me of Esther, who came before the presence of the king. And, you know, she too could have lost her life. She laid her life on the line because of her zeal for God's kingdom. Do you have zeal for God's kingdom? Or you're like, well, see what we can do here. Hopefully it'll be a nice semester for us. So you ask him, what is it you want? And I like the fact that Nehemiah said a quick prayer, right? You ever have that opportunity?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah? Say a quick prayer? Yeah. What is it you want? And then, let God use me to rebuild the city. Again, Nehemiah is bold before God, but he's also bold before the civic officials, right? He goes down to OSI and says, hey man, set us up, right?
Yeah.
Let us have all these rooms and, but we're going to follow the rules better than we did in the past.
Yeah.
There's this whole story behind that. We got in trouble partly because we kind of sort of deserved it a little bit. Yeah. But never mind all that. Now, I remember about 2.5 years ago, we'd been meeting at our house. We needed a place to meet. And I remember I challenged the church. I said, let's start praying for God to give us a place to meet. And it's going to be really cheap.
Yeah.
And right, and 9 o'clock the next morning, I had a phone call. Hey, would you come out to our church? We want to show you this. Never even met this guy. Is somebody who heard that we're, you know, and
wow.
Give us a place to be meeting there. $50 a month, folks.
Yes.
That's about as amazing as this thing right here. Our sister church in Fresno with the Alpha Mega, they got their whole huge, massive campus for $1.
Yeah.
God will do great things, but we have to have faith. Think about Nehemiah's faith, his boldness, but his humility. Think about that. Artaxerxes says, sure, I'll give you soldiers, army, money, material, letters. Yeah, the whole shooting match. It's crazy stuff. So, it's going to go from victory to victory, and the city's going to get built, right? We're going to sit here tonight. We're going to have our vision thing, and we're going to talk about what we're going to build, and we're going to have no opposition. At the end of the semester, we're going to look back, and it was great. I mean, everything went so smooth all the time. Nope. Verse 10. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite, that's not a little creature. That's a person from Ammon. Ammonite. Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this. They were very much disturbed that somebody was going to come and promote the welfare of Israel. So if we're going to do great things for God, we're going to get opposition. I tell you that right now. Now, there's two ways to get one opposition. One is by not following the rules and not doing it right, you know. We got some of that. But even if we do it the right way, there's going to be some opposition, all right? Be prepared. There's a foreshadow of things to come. And the greater victories we have in the name of God, the more opposition we're going to see. We just finished doing a study from 1 Peter that talks about that, right? Verse 11 through 18. So I went to Jerusalem. By the way, it says I went to Jerusalem, which is what? 400 miles, 500 miles, like a 2-month journey. Wow. With all these soldiers and all this stuff. I just went to Jerusalem. Yeah. All right. After staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few others. I had not told anyone what God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There were no mounts with me except the one I was riding. By night, I went out through the valley gate towards the jackal well and the dung gate, examining the walls of Jerusalem, which had been broken down, and its gates, which had been destroyed by fire. Then I moved on toward the fountain gate and King's Pool, but there was not enough room for my mount to get through, so I went up the valley by night, examining the wall. Finally, I turned back and re-entered through the valley gate. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, because as yet I had said nothing to the Jews or to the priests or the nobles or officials or any others who would be doing the work. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins. Its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace." I told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. And they said, "Let us start rebuilding." Or in another translation, "Let us rise up and build." And they began the good work. So God needs somebody to stand up and say, we need to do something here. We need to build something. So Nehemiah comes up with a plan. All right? Nehemiah was a very practical person. He was a very faithful person, but he was also a very practical person. We have to have a plan. So we're going to have a retreat, and we're going to have this evangelistic event, and we're going to have a women's day. And, you know, we got to get some plans going here, folks. And it needs to be y'all doing this stuff. It can't be just Jan and me. We're old people. We can't be doing all that stuff. Somebody has to come up with a plan. All right? So we're going to rely on God, but we need to have some plans. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to get in our groups. We're going to talk about, here's what I'd like to see happen this semester. It could be about this group. It could be about you individually, whatever it is. But then having the idea and planning is a whole different thing. Because when you make the plan, guess who ends up probably actually doing it, you know? Because, for example, what was it, 4.5 years ago, Jan and I, kind of thinking amongst ourselves, said, we need to be planting a church over here at UC Merced. We need an Alpha Omega Club over there. All right, so we put together this plan, and then we're like, all right, now who's going to lead this? Oops! Yeah. So he comes up with a plan, and then he says, all right, we need to get up. We need to get off our butts and make a difference on this campus, in this county, in this city. We want God to move to do great things through us. And he reminded them of what God had already done. All right? And if you're a young Christian, you may not have a lot of those stories. Jan and I have an infinite number of stories, and others of us do as well. God's done some amazing things. So Nehemiah says to the people, all right, time for action. Let's get up. Let's go out sharing our faith. Let's pray. Let's fast. Let's get into the community. Let's serve the community. Let's give food to the hungry and all that sort of stuff. So God's leader develops a vision, develops a plan, and imparts the vision to the people. Now, verse 19 and 20. All right? They said, let us start rebuilding. And of course, again, those who oppose God's people say, yeah, you know what? Now that you're starting to build, all right, I guess we'll just, all right, go for it. No. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us. What is this you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? I answered them by saying, the God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it. Again, I see Nehemiah's boldness. All right, chapter 3. I forgot to do this slide. Nehemiah evaluates the situation. He forms a plan. He creates a vision. He reminds the people that God is good. And he says, let's start doing something. All right, get some opposition. Tobiah and Sanballat, they're always going to be out there. If you think everybody's going to say good job, you crazy religious person, all right? No. So they're going to remind you of all the really stupid things that Christians have done, and there's plenty of those. And you're going to have to be humble about that as well. All right, verse 1 through 5. Eliashib the high priest and his fellow priests went to work and rebuilt the sheep gate. They dedicated it. And by the way, there's like four chapters. It goes on and on about who did this gate and who did this wall. We're going to skip all that. But anyway, they dedicated it. They set its doors in place, building as far as the Tower of the Hundred, which they dedicated as far as the Tower of Hananel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They started building. Because you know what? When God's godly leader creates a true godly vision, the people are going to get behind him. And stuff's going to start happening. So in this chapter, the priests and the Levites, they're leading the work. They're like the Bible talk leaders. Come on, Zane. Come on, Josh. Come on, let's do it. Let's get some stuff going here.
Yes, sir.
And in verse 20, look at Baruch. Who's this guy? Baruch. Verse 20. I like Baruch. Next to him, Baruch, son of Zabai. They had really weird names back then. I don't know where they came up with these names. Baruch, son of Zabai, zealously repaired another section. He was up there like Josh on campus. Hey, hey, you go share with Josh. Hey, hey, what are you doing? Hey, come over here. Hey, come to our Bible talk.
Really?
Have you watched it?
No, I haven't.
He's crazy. I'm like,
hey, man, come on, Josh.
I'm tempted to say, Josh, tone it down. But I say, no, I'm not going to. No. I'm going to tone it down. So I like Baruch. He's just a soldier in the army, you know what I'm saying? But he is zealously serving God. 4:1-5, when Sanballat heard we were rebuilding the wall, he became very angry and was greatly incensed. Yeah. If we have a Christian club of 40, 50, 60 members, we're going to start getting some attention. That happened when I was at the University of Colorado. We had a student group of about 150. Oh, my goodness. It got hot. I'll tell you that right now. I can tell you some stories. All right. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifice? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring stones back to life for these heaps of rubble burned as they are? Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, what are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down their wall of stones. That's where I got that picture there. Hear us, O God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Get them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Don't pray that for your fellow students. Don't pray this prayer. Okay. Let's be a little bit more nice to our fellow students. But that's what Nehemiah did. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the world. I'm not planning on imitating that particular prayer, okay? But you know what? People say you could never do it. Who are you guys? Where's your national organization? You know? The guy who's kind of leading this thing, he's 70 years old. What's he even, you know? And, you know, the people in the group, they're not a very talented at all. They're just a bunch of also-rans. I don't know what people are saying, not what they're thinking. They ridiculed them. He said, even if a fox were to climb on your wall, it would fall down. So what does Nehemiah do? He prays. He prays. Does he stop working? No. Does he take into account what's happening and change his plan a little bit? Well, actually, he did, right? Verse 6-9. So he rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height. For the people worked with all their heart. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, and the Arabs and Ammonites and the people of Ashdod heard what the repairs of the Jerusalem walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. And they plotted together to come and fight. Now they're going to just start killing them. Start killing them. Wow. And stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God. We posted a guard day and night to meet the threat. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out. There's so much rubble, we cannot repair the wall. All our enemies said, before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them. We will kill them and put an end to their work. All right? Again, it's not going to be a walkover. So what they could have done is they could have said, oh, man, we better back off, man. We're getting some people upset at us. So much rubble, man. It's like 42 degrees. We're freezing out here sharing our faith, which is true today. Yeah, it was freezing. Or it's 102 degrees. You know, we got so many danger. We're going to attack. You know, my GPA is going into the tank or whatever. I have a toothache, terrible headache, all this kind of stuff. But Nehemiah refuses. Verse 10. Meanwhile, let me see, I'm in verse 12. Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they will attack us. Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points in the wall at the exposed places, posted them by families. And so what he did is half the people stand there with a sword, the other half will build. Kind of slowed them down, you know what I'm saying? But they kept on building. They weren't going to stop. All right. That's verse 16 through 20. I'm going to end this lesson sort of quick here. All right. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other. Luckily, we got the Bible. That's our weapon. In verse 20, it said, wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us. Do you believe God will fight for us? Chapter 5, more problems, drought, famine, heavy taxes from the fellow Jews, division. Nehemiah takes a little bit of time out from his busy work to recreate unity among the people. Then in Nehemiah chapter 6, Sanballat and Tobiah say, if you can't beat him, join him. They try to compromise. Hey, we'll join your plan. We'll get you to have this nice milk toast church instead of this fired up church. Nope. And Nehemiah said, oh no. We're going to meet in the plains of Ono. And Nehemiah said, oh no, to Ono. All right? Good. All right. And then we'll finish out in Nehemiah 6:15. Yep. I don't know if that's exactly what it looked like, but that's what the archaeological models seem to say. Remember, Nehemiah 6:14-15. Remember Tobias and Sanballat, my God, because of what they have done. Remember also the prophet Noadiah and how she and the rest of the priests have tried to intimidate me. So the wall was completed on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. In 52 days. What's going to happen in the next 52 days? This room's going to be full. We're going to be back up there at Lake Yosemite Park.
Heck
yeah. Yeah. All right, let's be praying about that. All right, so to summarize, I hope I didn't go too long. I went a little bit too long, but Nehemiah, he loves God and he loves his kingdom. He prays boldly, yet humbly. He takes action. He comes up with a plan. He lets people know what's really going on. He doesn't sugarcoat it. He creates a powerful vision. He calls the people to rise up and build for God's kingdom. He refuses to stop building despite opposition. Jerusalem was restored and rebuilt. All right, so let's get in groups of 3 or 4. Let's share. What do you want to build? This could be your own personal vision for this semester if you want. Or it could be a vision for this club. Or, you know, or the church you're part of if you know, because this is a non-denominational club. So what do you want to build this semester? Number 2, what are you going to do in the next 2 weeks to kind of get started? What's your plan? All right? Got it? So let's do that. Groups of three or four. That's our discussion. Let's spread the old people out. We have, how many old people? We have five old people? Let's have at least one old person in each group, okay?